echte ervaring.
You are listening to That Digital Show, a digital transformation podcast presented by Google Cloud to help organizations grow business value in a digital world. Episode 6, The Digital Transformation of Healthcare. Today, we'll discuss how healthcare organizations are navigating new government regulations, the impact of the pandemic, and how the industry is becoming more innovative. Hello, everyone. Thank you for listening. I am Chris Hood, a digital strategist at Google Cloud, and joining me today is a global value advisor who heads up the healthcare vertical for our business application platform group, Carol Crow. Welcome, Carol. How are you?
I am really well, Chris. Thank you for asking. It's a great day here.
A couple of weeks ago, we were actually talking about doing a podcast together, and you mentioned that you wanted to focus on the healthcare industry and some of the exciting work that you are doing right now. I would love to hear more. What are we actually going to talk about today?
This is a topic that is very near and dear to my heart. So this is going to be the first in a series of podcasts focused on digital trends in healthcare. We will discuss topics that are top of mind for healthcare organizations, like the most recent government regulations around patient access, the impact that the pandemic has on our healthcare industry, and other topics that drive innovation in healthcare, putting patients at the forefront and making it easier for patients to engage with providers and payers. And how about the impact that life sciences have on our current day? With a potential vaccine in the near future, in the last phase of trials, I think we have a lot of questions on how researchers have been able to gather the information and be able to devise a vaccine that can address our coronavirus pandemic. So we will cover these and other topics that are of interest in the digital age of healthcare.
That's amazing. I love it. I'm so excited about this. So you've got some guests joining us as well, right?
We do. And I am really excited to introduce Andy Crown. He is with Google Cloud, and he is a product lead in the health plan data interoperability space. So welcome, Andy.
Thank you. I'm very pleased to be here.
And also joining us is Dharmesh Patel. He's also with Google Cloud and is a healthcare solutions manager.
Thank you, Carol. Pleased to be here on this podcast.
So today's topic is really around something that my customers have been asking me a lot for, and that is with the recent Health and Human Services rulings that just came out, how do you understand the CMS O&C rules and what does it mean to healthcare organizations?
Absolutely. Before we dig into the specifics of the rule, to just sort of understand a little bit how we got to where we are today. And like a lot of things in healthcare, it's not necessarily a short and direct path. I mean, you have to really go back to the 21st Century Cures Act, which was pretty much the last bit of legislation that started the ball rolling on how to give patients access to their healthcare data so that they can make more informed decisions. That kicked off an activity that told the ONC and CMS to go figure out how to make healthcare data interoperable. And that led to the two rules that you talked about, the CMS rule and the ONC rule. And between them, they really lay out the technology and the endpoints that health plans and providers are going to need to put in place in order to ensure that members and patients have access to their data and allow them to take that data, expose it to a third-party application ecosystem, which should give them much more control over their care and ultimately drive down the cost and complexity of care delivery.
That's great. It sounds like something that is really valuable to the healthcare industry, because I know that data is probably everywhere from the customers that I've talked to. So what is it about these rulings that make it unique?
So you have to think a little bit about the scope of the rule and where that came from. For some time, the CMS has had a blue button initiative, which allowed Medicare patients to get access to their claims data. And that's proved popular and effective. And so really what the government has done now is take that pattern and expand that pattern to other federally funded healthcare plans and turn that into an open set of API endpoints that are really trying to encourage these third-party apps to connect and provide services. And encouragement is in the form of regulation and a deadline by which the plans and providers have to meet certain of these rules. Otherwise, they will incur penalties. What this will do is enable health plans and providers to share data. And I think the innovative plans that I'm talking to are not looking at this as purely as a being required to meet regulations. They're looking at it as an opportunity to put in a digital platform so that they can then build on and drive member engagement and drive member choice and member satisfaction. So there's kind of two ways you can look at it. You can either look at it as a something you're forced to do or something that actually is going to provide a foundation for you to really engage more with your members.
If I were to try to simplify the rulings and what it means to some of the customers so that I can get started on an implementation, is it that the CMS O&C rules is really trying to target patient information, making patient data more accessible to the patient at the forefront? And for healthcare organizations to do so, they're mandating that the data be in an API, but taking that a step further and making that into a standardized format in order to be able to exchange the data and make it more easily consumable by an application.
There's some specific API endpoints that the plans initially are being asked to make available. And so one is a patient access API. The second is a provider directory API. And then a little later comes payer-to-payer data exchange. So let's just talk about those a little bit each one. So the idea behind the patient access API is that a member of a plan is able to get to their data, because it is their data at the end of the day. There's a lot of signal in that data that can help improve care coordination and reduce the cost of care. So that's the kind of patient access API. The provider directory API is aimed at solving the problem of how do I figure out which doctor is in network? Sounds like an easy question. It's actually quite a hard thing to do, is to figure out which doctor's in network. And I'm sure we've all had that experience of getting a bill and you look at the bill and you think, wow, that's a big bill. And because there's some provider on there that's actually not in network. And then the last one is perhaps the one I think that has the biggest potential to drive change, which is payer-to-payer data exchange. So if you think about the people move between health plans, and I've heard numbers like 20% churn on some of these health plans. So that means that 20% of the members are moving from health plan year over year. What happens typically when you move from one health plan to another is any data, claims or clinical data gets left behind in the old health plan system. And then you join the new health plan and you kind of start from scratch again. Well, payer-to-payer data exchange is designed to allow you to take that data with you, which means that when you go to your new plan, you can turn up with that data and give that to your plan, and that should drive far more continuity in care. It should reduce the number of repeat procedures because perhaps they didn't have access to a scan you'd had before or didn't have a record that you'd had a colonoscopy before, etc. So the payer-to-payer data exchange is really the one that's, I think, going to have the most effect on the industry. And it's not something that really they're typically used to being able to deal with now, having members turn up with data that they want to give to the plan.
Yeah, I could actually really, really benefit from that because I remember a case where my son was having some vertigo issues. And we went to like 20 doctors across the country in order to address this vertigo issue. We went to multiple specialists as well. But for each doctor that we visited, he or she did not have any access to the prior history of visits that we had and what the summaries were. And so we ended up having to get paper copies of each office visit. And a lot of times there were 10, 20, you know, 50 pages in there, and carrying them around cross country through the plane from one doctor to the next just to get a final decision on what he was experiencing. It was really a tough process. And so what you're saying is that with this data exchange in a common format and being able to share it with payers, providers, and even the patient, that's going to make life a lot easier for at least the patient. And it sounds like with payers as well.
Carol, I have the exact same type of experience. I was recently going in and out of some hospitals doing some x-rays. And it was surprising to me that every time I went to another doctor, they didn't have my history and that history was not traveling with me. Even more so, I had to do a COVID test and it came back negative. And then I went to the next doctor's office, like only a day later, and they're asking me all the COVID questions. And I was just thinking, can't you see in my history that I just had a COVID test yesterday that says that it was negative? Like, why is that not a thing? It's amazing to me. So I can totally get how some of these things make sense and where we're heading. Andy, we've heard a lot in terms of the legislation and the rulings of why we're doing this. Dharmesh, I'm interested in terms of what's the technology behind this? What are we using to make all of this happen?
So on a technology front, I think first comes the standards, right? The standards that we as an industry that need to agree on. And also government is playing a big role on standardizing on a couple of standards here, which is the data format standard on how we exchange data between the two systems and how do we persist healthcare information in a common format so that when a system is talking to another system, there is no ambiguity. There is no go figure it out. There is a common way and a consistent way of doing it. And that drives the interoperability. So that standard is FHIR, is one standard for data representation. Then there is a whole openness aspect of this standard where you want to expose this data, or this FHIR formatted data, so that it is easily consumable, but as well as it is secure. So for easy consumption, there is one other industry standard technology called REST, RESTful API. So REST is built into the requirements, into the specification. That's one way of accessing the information. The second part, which is the security part, even on security side, there are industry standard like OAuth and OpenID Connect. Based on that, they have defined more healthcare-specific authentication and authorization standard called SMART, so that the application can interoperate with each other, can be made portable, so that once you write an application, you can take that application and run it with another health system. That makes your applications interoperable. So the standards like FHIR, SMART, and all the industry standard that already existed, like REST and OAuth and OpenID Connect, I think this forms the core technology foundation for making this regulation successful.
And Dharmesh, do any of those technologies actually secure my patient data?
Certainly. The intention of the definition of the standards is to make sure that the implementations, if they follow the standards, they are secure. And we have a right amount of safeguard on the patient data. And with the right level of consenting from the patient, we are sharing this information back to the applications that are acting on behalf of those patients. So there is a whole notion of opening up patient data through APIs, but at the same time, the consuming application could be provided by anybody. How do you trust that those consuming applications who's acting on behalf of you is making a legitimate request for the data, your data? Eventually, it is, Carol, your data and my data that is stored into the system. Healthcare systems and providers and payers are guardian of that data. So the technology and the standards that promote the technology that should implement those standards, I think they need to take care of this core piece of it is, am I sharing this information to the right application? And do I have a consent and authorization in place for sharing this information to the app that is asking for it? And that's where the OAuth 2 comes into the picture, and the SMART specifications and the SMART authorization scopes and the standards comes into the picture.
So we've seen other industries go through this transformation. Banking right. comes to mind. We have open banking that has started to build standards in terms of everything you just outlined. Has the healthcare industry been taking notes from the banking industry in terms of how they're building the standardization of data?
It seems like, certainly, because the underlying security standards or the underlying data representation standards are still the same standards, whether it is banking or for healthcare. JSON is the way they represent, or XML is the way they represent data. It is just more canonicalized, more vocabulary-wise, familiar to the healthcare industry, how FHIR model is defined. So under the hood, FHIR uses XML and JSON to represent the data, right? It is just the FHIR which is on top of it, which has healthcare nomenclature into it or vocabulary built into it.
So if we were to take a small step back for people who may not know, what is FHIR? What does it stand for? What is it?
FHIR is an acronym. FHIR.
Got it.
And it stands for Fast Healthcare Interoperability Resources. And so it's all in the name, really. The fact that you started with the word FAST, I think, gives a sense of what we're trying to achieve with this. It's about making healthcare interoperability easier and faster.
It's a representation of all the clinical concepts and entities. So when you look at not just clinical, but the healthcare in general. So if you look at some of the clinical concepts like patient, for example, or a practitioner or a clinician, they have the representation in a different system in a different way, right? Depending on which system you're using, whether it is a pharmacy system or a laboratory system or electronic medical record system, how you represent patient might be different. With FHIR, they have taken that definition and said, these are the elements that are required to represent a patient entity. And they have coded it into a format called JSON. And HL7.org is the organization behind definition of FHIR as a specification, which is an international organization. It's a global standard. That's why what Andy just said was it is a standard, but it is an extensible standard. So if I want to implement FHIR that meets my regulatory requirements or my local processes within UK, which is different than US, I can build a profile which will work in UK as compared to US. So that extensibility of the FHIR through FHIR profiles, there's a concept called value set, codes, which maps to, and coding is a big thing in the healthcare industry. We all know that, right? Every concept or everything is coded in healthcare industry. For example, diagnosis code, RX codes. So all those codes are tied to some systems. And FHIR is reusing some of those coding systems and filling the gaps by defining consistent coding model as well. So all this has been thoughtfully taken care of in the FHIR standards, and that makes it very healthcare specific. But again, it rides on top of JSON.
So if JSON is a standard internationally and FHIR is an international standard as well, why aren't more healthcare companies adopting these standards?
Let's unpack that a second. There are two reasons, I think. Because of the nature of and being an extensible standard, you really have to extend the standard to meet certain use cases. So typically what's required is that the industry parties that are collaborating in a use case would kind of agree their FHIR implementation guidelines for the use case that they are wanting to support. And so we're talking about CMS interoperability. That is a use case. But secondly, FHIR is a relatively new standard. So people are not currently managing their data in FHIR. Most of the healthcare systems, and let's look at EHRs for a second. If you look at the top three EHR vendors, I don't think there's one of them that was, the newest one of them was founded in something like 1971. I mean, the technology is 1980s technology. It's relational, some of them are not even relational, but it's old school IT tech, and FHIR is a modern tech standard. So there's actually a bit of a gap between the way that a lot of the traditional back office systems of record manage their data and this new way of representing data that requires some technology wizardry to move the data from one to the other. So that's, yeah, to be fair on the vendors, that's a non-trivial activity. And they need some encouragement sometimes to do that, because sharing of data in healthcare has not always been something that people do willingly. So I think what you're seeing with the rules now is, let's call it some encouragement from the federal government. But the encouragement is coming with a really well-prescribed set of rules, technical rules around how that data should be shared. So those two things kind of come together to make this effort at healthcare interoperability really something that looks like it's going to stick.
So we see these types of challenges across all industries, really, which is we have legacy applications, legacy infrastructure, and trying to modernize these into existing or newer formats. Dharmesh, how are we helping organizations, and maybe not just healthcare, but just organizations in general, in this conversion, in this modernization, and getting people to move from some of this outdated legacy equipment into this more modernized approach?
From Google perspective, I think we are providing tools, technologies, and solutions and accelerators that our customers and the healthcare industry payers and providers can utilize to speed up the conversion, speed up the adoption of the standards. So acceleration is the key part here. And to be very specific, we have a native support for FHIR in one of our products, our managed service. And we support R4 standards, which is one of the required standards to meet the CMS and ONC requirements. So that's what we are doing from the Google perspective. In order to transform data from the legacy formats that are currently widely used in the industry, like CDA, HL7, V2, DICOM, and others, we have patents published on that. We have adapters that we are working on, and the services that we provide on the Google Cloud that could be utilized to build those type of adapters by even the third-party vendors and provide products that the healthcare industry can generally be beneficial out of it. One industry standard, for example, that is used prominently by the payers in claims area is X12. And we are looking at using the technologies we have in Google Cloud, we can certainly build an adapter to do X12 to FHIR conversion, for example, so that we can support our claims of the payers and third-party administrators who need to have a problem of converting claims information into FHIR. We do think about it from the perspective of solving the problem for the industry and providing the tools and underlying technologies that can help the entire ecosystem directly to the customer, providers and payers, as well as the independent software vendors who build products that could be used by the payers and providers.
I was thinking about these examples that Andy was talking about a moment ago, which were things like payer-to-payer and patient access and just overall coordination of care. In order to accomplish this on some level, this data has to be exposed. And I know we've talked a little bit about APIs, but I'm actually going to ask this to Carol. What are some of the ways that you're seeing today in terms of how do we expose this data? And maybe it's building some ecosystem and doing it in a secure manner. What does that look like to people in the healthcare industry?
So I'm really glad you asked that, Chris, because people in the healthcare industry are probably late adopters of technology. And what I'm seeing is a lot of point-to-point APIs. With point-to-point APIs, when you want to make a change at, say, a back end, as if you were transforming that data from an old legacy format from HL7 to maybe the new FHIR R4 format, it takes time. At the same time, we're getting a lot of pressure from the applications, let's say a MyChart application that allows you to view the patient information and their vitals. They're looking for new features in that application much faster than the back end systems are able to provide. And so having an API management system in the middle to act as a facade, or let me call it a mediator, that will allow a seamless experience for the application and those users of the application, while at the same time, from a back-end IT standpoint, being able to transform that data is really, really valuable. And so an API management system is probably one of the first things that I would recommend to a customer that is starting off on this journey to get that platform in place so that they can service the needs of their applications and subsequently their end users, whether they be patients, doctors, clinicians, et cetera, as well as the needs of their IT team, who is in the process of doing a really valuable service by transforming that data into the latest standards.
So in theory, what I'm hearing is an API management platform could help you do all of these things we've already been talking about. And Andy, if I was to simplify this down, what I'm hearing is we have to expose the data, to Carol's point, in some type of secure manner. We also have to manage that data. And I think this helps us better manage that data. And it also helps to convert the data, which is what Dharmesh was talking about earlier. So are those really the three pillars that we're looking at, which is converting data, managing data, exposing data?
That's right. If people ask me to boil this down to the three challenges that you face to be compliant, that's really the three challenges. I mean, you don't currently have your data in FHIR, so you've got to convert it. You then need to manage that data when it's in a FHIR format and provide those REST APIs that the FHIR spec mandates that Dharmesh talked about. And then lastly, you've got to provide secure access to those API endpoints, which is something that an API management product can do for you. So fundamentally, those are the three things you've got to get your head around. What kind of technology do I need to put in place to solve that? What kind of business processes or practices do I need to wrap around that in order to be able to make sure that I provide a resilient service that is performant enough and secure enough for this app ecosystem that's going to emerge and be pulling data through these APIs?
So I think it's actually time for our question of the day. So here we go. I have a question of the day, and I'm going to pose this to each one of you. I think it goes right into what we were just talking about, Andy, and that is, how do I get started? It's a fairly simple question, but probably pretty complex. So Dharmesh, tell us, if it was you, how would you get started?
Well, I will wear a hat of a CIO of a provider organization, let's say. And I'm running a laboratory management system. I'm running a pharmacy management system, depending on how integrated I am, or I'm integrating with a pharmacy system. I'm running my electronic medical record system and all of these. And then suddenly these rules comes to me and says, I have to support FHIR R4, which my IT doesn't know what it is. And they have to now figure out, learn. There's a huge amount of challenges in front of me. The way I would start is first, I have a lot of subject matter experts in my organization who would tell me what my systems are and what my where my data is. So I would have the good inventory of that very first thing, right? And then I would try to map it to what is the minimum requirement that I need to support for my organization to convert that data into FHIR, to map it to the FHIR. And then I'll go, that's how I would start my journey, right? That's my homework that I would do first. And then I would look for a partner if I don't have enough technical experience in-house to support me in this analysis and the three-step framework that Andy talked about, transforming the FHIR, identifying the solution to store the FHIR, and then what is the solution to serve and secure the FHIR API, the FHIR-based API, start looking into those.
Great. Andy?
To start with, let's make sure that you understand actually what your obligations are under the regulations, because not all pieces of data need to be served through this API. It only applies to certain types of plan, et cetera. So number one, make sure you actually have to do this. And in order to do that, you've got to get smart with the regulations. Unfortunately, the regulations in total are about 1,600 pages of reading. So you make a cup of coffee, put your readers on, understand the regulations. You also need to get a little smart around the standards. There's a lot of terminology, technical terminology in here. Dharmesh has taken us through some of that as a primer, which is good. The whole point of this is to expose data through these APIs. So you've got to understand what data you've currently got, where is it. For most plans, their claims data is well understood. That's their business. Clinical data, not so much. They pull clinical data for all sorts of different use cases, and generally it's not well managed. And so that's where the problem areas are likely to arise. You have to make a technology decision. You have to decide whether you want to build or buy. I would advise you don't build. There's a deadline on these rules. You have to be compliant by 1/1/21, although the fines have been delayed until 7/1/21. So you have about a year. Building is not for the faint-hearted. So I think you've got to look for a technology that's out there. I would also advise that you look for a technology that is deliverable as a managed service, because you've got to deal with security around exposing your data, which is something that perhaps people are not that used to. And you've got to deal with an unknown scale. No one quite knows how big this app ecosystem is going to be. So I think it's important to choose an underlying technology that can scale with that demand, that you're not having to rush and buy servers and configure, which is why we think a cloud-based solution is actually the best option here, because that gives you a scalability out of the box.
And Carol, what do you think? How do you get started?
So I totally agree with what Dharmesh and Andy have said about getting started, but I'm actually going to put another spin on it. So one of the questions that come to my mind is, how do I prioritize what to start first. And so one of the things that I like taking a look at is who's actually going to benefit from all this stuff? Who's going to benefit from ensuring that you comply with the rules, getting your data into a standardized format? And the beneficiary there is going to be the patient. The side beneficiary is actually going to be doctors, clinicians, and then, of course, the payers and providers. But primarily, the beneficiary is going to be the patient. And so if I'm thinking about a patient, I'm thinking about the applications, my interactions with doctors, how to make life easier there, and the applications that would support the patients, the doctors, the clinicians. And so if I were to start to prioritize how to get started, I would look at what the needs are of the applications that support the patients and figure out what the data needs are from there and get started that way. But I also know that application needs are going to come much faster than the ability to be able to transform the data into a standardized format. So if I were a CIO, I would actually look for a platform, an API management platform perhaps, that will allow me to manage the exposure of APIs to my applications in a secure manner and in a way that I can meet the needs seamlessly of my applications, as well as meet the needs of my IT staff that is going through that transformation process and needs the time to ensure that that transformation process goes seamlessly on the back end.
Opportunities like this don't come around that frequently. And I think there's a real chance for plans to do this in a way that you meet the regulations, but you also put a foundation in for a data-driven innovation moving forward. So you can kind of do this one of two ways. I encourage people to think a little bigger and think about what's the art of the possible if you do this the right way.
I love the idea of think bigger. Absolutely. Well, thank you, everyone. Thank you, Carol, for joining me. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Dharmesh.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chris.
It's fun. Thank you.
And thank you, everyone, for listening. If you would like to learn more about the show, share feedback, or ask questions, you can find us online and throughout social media, all at thatdigitalshow.com. Please share the link with your colleagues, partners, and friends, and join us again for another insight discussion about innovation, building, and growing business value, all on That Digital Show. Thanks for listening.